And when Saul's son heard that Abner was dead in Hebron, his hands were feeble and all the Israelites were troubled. And Saul's son had two men that were captains of bands. The name of the one was Baanah, and the name of the other was Rechab, the sons of Rimmon, a Berothite of the children of Benjamin, for Beroth also was reckoned to Benjamin. And the Berothites fled to Jatiam and were sojourners there until this day. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet. He was 5 years old when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. And the sons of Rimmon and the Berothite, Rechab and Baanah, went and came about the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth, who lay on a bed at noon. And they came thither into the midst of the house as though they would have fetched wheat, and they smote him under the fifth rib, and Rechab and Baanah his brother escaped. For when they came into the house, he lay on his bed in his bedchamber, and they smote him and slew him and beheaded him and took his head and gat them away through the plain all night. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth into David to Hebron and said to the king, Behold the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, thine enemy, which sought thy life. And the Lord has avenged my lord, and the Lord has avenged my lord, the king, this day of Saul and his seed. And David answered Rechab and Baanah, his brother, the sons of Rimmon, the Berothite, and said to them, As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my soul out of all adversity, when one told me, saying, Behold, Saul is dead, thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought that I would have given him a reward for his tidings. How much more, when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed, shall I not therefore now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth? And David commanded his young men, and they slew them, and cut off their hands and their feet, and hanged them over the pool of Hebron, over the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron. And boy, if you don't think there's some meat in this one, woo! Good little chapter. Let's go back to the first part of the chapter again. We realize again this is trying to teach us something internally, correct? We're not concerned with the historical fact about these people dying, cutting somebody's heads off or hands off and all this stuff. We want to get into the spiritual side of this, true or false. Okay? We go to the spiritual side because God is a spirit working internally in us, so this is a spiritual thing he's doing. Now, when Saul's son, and who was that? Ishbosheth, heard that Abner was dead in Hebron, his hands were feeble and all the Israelites were troubled. Okay? What is he trying to tell us? He heard Ishbosheth, the man of shame. Wonder who that is? The carnal mind. Heard that Abner, who is Abner? My father is light. It's a son, of course, but it's the son of the wrong side, the wrong order. At least Abner had this much. He knew God was light, okay, but he still saw him external. See, it's still under the law. It's the old order. They're still looking at God as light. They don't see that we are the light also. If the light is in us, what are we? Aren't we the lamps also, the lights? So he just gets still with the old order of thinking. It was dead in Hebron, the place of association, right? His hands were feeble, and all the Israelites were troubled. Well, when you realize that God is not in the old order of thinking, guess what your hands produce in that order? Nothing. As long as you realize the old order of, under the law, just like the church system today, it's the old order. They're still holding on to the rules and regulations. So what can you produce in that realm? Nothing. They're feeble, see? You can't do anything with it. And all the Israelites were what? Well, the word here literally is anxious. They were all anxious. Remember we were talking about being all jittery and everything? It's anxious, see? Now, we're anxious. Now, what's the Philippians 4:6 say? Be anxious for nothing. So, if something is bothering you in your life, what should you do? Just like we said a while ago, step back, look at what's going on, and say, what's wrong about this picture? You know that little cartoon that comes in the paper all the time? They'll have two pictures side by side. In this picture and in this picture, it says, pick out so many things that don't line up right. That's what you've got to do. You've got to take a picture of what's going on in your life. Step back and look at the picture of what God says your life is all about. And say, what's different between that picture and this picture? And I think I've been blessed in my life. God's given me ability in my mind to see pictures like that. I could see things in the natural before God ever started dealing with me. I could see things in a room. I could walk into a room like we're in right now with everything like it is. And you could come in and do one little simple thing like this. Move that one little piece like that. You can ask Lois. I'd come into the room. I said, who's been in here? What do you mean? I said, I can see something's moved. I mean, I could see two pictures in my mind. It's a gift, I guess he gave me. I can see what it was before. And when I come in and look at it now, I see something blurred in one spot. Huh? It just did not match in my mind. I put it up there and it was something just different in it. So I could see that little box had been moved. And our kids, I wouldn't let them go into my garage because there were so many things I didn't want broken. And, you know, kids would always touch something. And they'd go in and move something. As soon as I walk in, I could tell that they did it. I said, who's been? And they said, Mom, how do you know it was in there? We didn't touch anything. Oh, yeah, they touched something. To them, it wasn't important, see? They didn't see the picture. And that's the way we have to see things. So when something starts making us anxious, what should we do? Stop. Back up and look at the picture. Say, no, this is the way it should be, and this is what I'm looking at, and something's wrong. See? Be still and know that He's God, see? Look at the picture. How many of the Israelites were anxious? All of them. See, this isn't something just to a few people that's making a mistake that goes to church. He said all the Israelites were that way. The whole church realm is this way. Everything in the church realm, you can act smooth on the outside, but inside, you're a seething mess. It was not comfortable to them. See, it was some new order that God is bringing in. This new order of the new covenant is changing things, and they're not comfortable anymore in that. Sure they are. They don't have an option in that. Everyone's that way until God steps in and makes His choice on His first fruit. See? And it's something He chooses. It's not up to us. And Saul had two men, and Saul's son had two men that were captain of bands. The name of the one was Banah, which means what? The first one was Banah, which means affliction. And the name of the other was Rechab, the second one, the son of, and that his name means rider, the son of Rimmon. What does that mean? It means a pomegranate. It can also represent the fruit or the tree. You know, it can be the fruit or the tree, okay? And it also speaks of an artificial ornament, a decoration, can speak of religion. Because religion hangs all kinds of things on you, doesn't it? Even in the old order, they had all kinds of things hanging on their dress, didn't they? Decorations. Symbols. But you know what? This is no longer a day of symbols. This is the day of reality. I don't need a symbol of Christ in my life. I need Christ in my life. I don't need the shadows and types in my life anymore. I need the reality of Christ. True or false? What he's telling you here, there's a change coming. And like I said in the first book of Samuel, that was all the things that was happening to David. But David knew who he was, but he had to experience all these things. In this second chapter, the second book of Samuel, we're seeing all the experiences of David come to fruition, or the fruit of this thing that God has put in his life. Does this make sense to you? Sooner or later, we're going to experience, just like all the 12 tribes of Israel, all those 12 experiences of God walking and growing into God, okay? So anyway, we got the two sons here, the problems, okay? The children of Benjamin. Benjamin, what does his name mean? Son of my right hand, okay? I didn't touch Berothite. The Berothite is the inhabitants of, or well, the inhabitants of the Beroth or the well. So they're inhabitants of a place of well. And you know, I can take this thing and look at it in my mind and see, inhabitants of the well. And I think about John chapter 4, the woman at the well. She was talking about this thing, and here the very source she was talking about, she was talking to. She didn't see it. And this, I see the same thing here. They were inhabitants of the well, but they didn't realize who they were. Just like the old order Jews didn't realize that God was within them. See, they still saw him as an external God living somewhere else. Go ahead. Absolutely was spiritually blind. Absolute. It speaks of covenant, sure. And that's the new covenant coming in. They were part of the covenant, but they didn't see it. They just didn't see it yet. Absolutely. And it said they were of the children of Benjamin, the sons of the right hand. It was his choice. He chose them, okay? Because they were also reckoned to Benjamin, or they were part of the inhabitants. Like, each tribe had a piece of land. And these Beeroths were all part of, Beeroth was part of the land of Benjamin, part of the inheritance of Benjamin. And the Berothites, or the inhabitants of the well, or the covenants, fled to where? Gittaim. What does that mean? Double wine press, double, two, or two wine. A place of double pressure. See, when you run from God, all you're going to do when you jump out of the frying pan is jump into the fire. Which one's hotter? Huh? See? You have to realize sometimes it's better just to sit there and take what God gives you than trying to adjust it yourself, because you're going to put yourself in more trouble, right? Remember what we said, step back and evaluate the picture? Look at the picture and see what's wrong. Figure out what it is and see, get your direction down, because you'll just jump out of the frying pan into the fire. Huh? Don't jump out of the boat. It's what Paul said, Acts 27. Don't jump out of the boat. Let her drive, he said. Let her drive. Okay, the last, this third verse says, and were sojourners there until this day. And now the word were is not a correct word. It's literally the word became. And they became sojourners there until this day. Now tell me the difference between they were sojourners and they became sojourners. See, they were sojourners means they were always there, see? But here's what he says. They became sojourners. Do you know what that tells me? They were not always sojourners, but in their mind, they became sojourners. They become strangers in the land. They become travelers, transient people traveling through. Why? Did God say they were? Nope. In their mind, they ran from the fear. Fear makes you a sojourner in the land. Fear is not of God. True or false? See, this is that carnal mind making up them cherubim, making up them thoughts for you, and driving you into becoming a sojourner. They're changing you into the wrong thinking process. True or false? See there? And Jonathan, which was a gift of God, his name means Yahweh has given, Saul, the Edomite or Adam man, son, had a son that was lame. Literally, he was maimed. Not just lame, but the word says maimed. And I'll tell you why in a minute. Of his feet. So that tells me his lifestyle is kind of crimped. It wasn't of his doing. When you're maimed, it's not necessarily of your doing. And the story tells later in a verse here, it was not his doing. He was born perfectly healthy. You know, it said about, in the scriptures, in Ezekiel, said he was perfect in all of his ways. Talked about Job, he said he was perfect in all of his ways, loved God, hated evil, until something had to come to pass, the test. Now look what happens. He was lame to his feet, so his lifestyle was messed up, right? He was maimed to his feet, and he was 5 years old Why is it important it's five? Not four, not three, not six, not seven. Five means two things. Grace or death. There can be two things. Now his lifestyle was maimed, okay? Was all messed up. And the reason it was messed up because of his father and his father. Saul was an Adam man. True? What does seed produce? Like kind. Now watch. And Saul, and when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel, and what is Jezreel? God sowed. God sowed those things into that boy's life. They were all there for testing, weren't they? God's purpose. He did it all. He set it up. And his nurse took him up and fled, and it came to pass, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame. There's his lifestyle change. You know, kind of like when Jacob wrestled with God. He wrestled with God in his time of ignorance. And wouldn't you say fear is kind of in that ballpark of ignorance? Wouldn't it? So he was wrestling with God and he came up limping, didn't he? Right? Well, what do you think this nurse is here? Wasn't the nurses in that day, most of them female? So wonder what we're talking about. His soul created the problem. We're talking spiritual here. And when we let our woman grab us in fear and run us through our emotional realms, guess what's going to happen? It's going to cripple up our lifestyle, our walk with God, isn't it? When our emotions get all out of control. True or false? Okay, so we see the emotions all out of control, and that's what caused him to be maimed. But now he fell. Was it his fault? Okay. But his emotions created the problem. Right? He was still yet young, and God understands in our life, we're still yet young. We're not talking about physical age. We're talking about our spiritual age with him. We're in the process of becoming mature sons, true or false. Okay? So we realize that we all are in this process, because if you read Romans 11, I think it's verse 32, it said he concluded all in unbelief, that he could have mercy upon all, not just part of us. We're all going to get mercy because he concluded that we were all, or he placed us all in unbelief. Okay? And his name was what? Mephibosheth, Seth. What does that mean? Exterminated the idols, or the dispeller of shame, it says. But if you look a little deeper in the languages, you'll find it says he's the dispeller of the shame of Baal. Something tells me this boy's got a future. Okay? That talks about a son who's had his lifestyle messed up, but you know what? He's still a son of the king. He's going to walk a different walk, all different from everybody else. And you know, back then, if you had some kind of a physical problem, you couldn't be a king. Thank God that he doesn't see the physical attributes today about how big we are, how small we are, or anything else. He's only looking at the heart content. He judges the thoughts and intents of the scale, right? No. He judges the thoughts and intents of our heart. It's not how much we weigh in the physical or how big or small or anything else, or collar hair or lack of hair or anything else. It's about our heart. That's all it's about. I've got a prayer then, haven't I? And the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, and Rechab and Baanah, went and came about the heat of the day into the house of Ibosheth, who lay on a bed at noon. Now there's some problems with this whole thing here. I'm not talking about mistranslations. I'm saying there's a problem with a man who would be laying on his bed at noontime. You hear what I'm saying? And his name literally means man of shame. Somebody laid around all day and didn't work back there. Surely wasn't a man of honor, was he? Something wrong with this man. It literally speaks of our carnal man, doesn't it? And he was in the house, see? He was in a very comfortable place back in his humanity. And it was at noon, high noon. Well, noon tells me something. What does it tell you about noon? What would noon tell you in the scriptures? Huh? The sun straight overhead. That means if there's a noonday shadow, it's under my feet. I'm standing in him. There's a time when I should be standing in God, and this man's laying in bed. We got a problem here, haven't we? He's the lazy man. that doesn't want to get up and go, right? He's a procrastinator. He's laying in the middle of the day. He should be standing up. And what day are we talking about? The day of the Lord. This is the day of the Lord. We should be standing up with the sun high over our head and the shadows under our feet. All that darkness under our feet. Yeah. He wasn't ready for anything except the knife in the belly. Okay? And they came there into the midst of the house as though they would have fetched wheat, and they smote him not under but in the belly or the abdomen. The word fifth rib isn't there. That's something English put in there. They stuck him in the belly, okay? And Rechab and Baanah, his brother, escaped, or so they think. You don't get away with anything. He said he reveals everything. They just thought they got away. Because when they came into the house, he lay on the bed in his bedchamber, and they smote him and slew him, and they beheaded him and took his head and departed on the road through the desert all night. Now, boy, does this tell me things. They departed on the road. When they went in there and committed murder, and they killed Ishbosheth, the man of shame. Murder has been part of the way of humanity from the very beginning, from Cain and Abel. True or false? This way of murder. Remove somebody who is different from you. What's the solution? Kill them. Wonder where they got that thought process. Was it from the mind of God? They got it out of the carnal mind. And that's exactly what is going on here. It's the same process he's trying to show you. When God shows us that the way of carnality is not right, he did not tell us to go kill somebody, did he? But your carnality says, they don't think like me, they're my enemy, go kill them. War only begets war. That's why in our countries today, when we have these wars all over in the Middle East, it's because of this killing somebody, just get somebody mad and they're going to kill somebody back for you. Somebody has to stop it somewhere and say that's the end of it. It's the same thing in your life. You have to call an end to the war. You have to say, I am no more fighting, I'm no more warring, I'm no more killing anyone. They do what they want and I refuse to fight back. But anyway, they took his head. Now, what does it mean when they took his head? There you go. When they killed him, they took the very same stinking thinking that he had as a man of shame to themselves. They did the same thing he would have done. Carnality only begets carnality. They took his head. They took his thinking process. And don't you know when you retaliate to someone what you're doing? You're being just like them. You're stooping to the same pits that they're in. So when they took his head, they took his thinking process. Isn't that wonderful to see that? Don't do it. Don't do it. That's there for a reason. But they took his head and they got them away through the plain or through the desert. Didn't say all day. You take that kind of thinking, I can tell you where you're going. You're going into a desert place. There's no anointing in it. There's no Christ in it. There's no word in it. And it's dark. Do you hear me? You take that revenge upon yourself, you're walking in a place of desertion, you're walking out there in that desert place all by yourself, and it's very cold and dark and dry. And it's total ignorance when you walk out there in it. Don't take the thinking of Ishbosheth. Leave him alone. In Jesus' teaching, in the talking about the wheat being planted, remember the parable of the wheat and the tares? He said, don't pull up the tares, but let them grow together. There's a reason for that, isn't there? It'll make them tougher. You got to fight through this stuff. It's not a cakewalk. Leave them alone. If the time comes, he'll send the harvesters out there, and they'll first gather the tares out and burn them in the fire, in the furnace. So leave them alone. That's what he's teaching us here. Leave everybody else alone. The only one you got to deal with is yourself. Correct? You deal with yourself. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth unto David to Hebron. Now, here's what people do in this religious type of thinking. They go out and slay somebody and they come back and brag about it. Guess what I did? Okay? They took the head of a man of shame, they took his carnality, and they brought it to David. Do you know how many people in their carnality do this same thing every day in the church realms? We showed them, boy, we did what we did. We went out and destroyed them. They don't think. Them old Baptists over there, we're Pentecostal. We're apostolic. We're smarter than them. We showed them how bad they was. We got in their faces and shouted louder than they did, and they got embarrassed and run. What good did that do? Showed you were both ignorant. You took on that same thinking process. Jesus never attacked anyone, did he? Then what right do we have to attack anyone? Come on, someone tell me, who do we have a right to attack? Well, what if they attack us first? So what? They attacked him first too, didn't they? He still never retaliated. If you're thinking with the mind of Christ, if you have truly had this heart transplant that we talk about in Ezekiel, when he says, I'm going to take it out and give you a new one, when the heart comes out, it goes in the trash, it'll never be used again. Once the mind of Christ comes on, you can't go back and think about it. Why do you think it says in John, those that are born of God cannot sin? Because when the heart transplant comes, you can't even think with that thing. It's like taking a hard drive out of the computer and putting a new hard drive in and reprogramming it and then trying to utilize it off the old hard drive laying on the desk over there somewhere. It's an impossibility. I can't draw any information from that old one. It's been disconnected. It's cut off. Thank God it's cut off. But they brought it to David in Hebron, in the place of association, and said to the king, behold, the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul. So we got the man of shame, the carnal mind, from the Adam man. Your adversary, which sought your life, and the Lord has given revenge to my Lord the king this day of Saul and of his seed. Now I got a question here. Who wanted it? Did David say, someone go out and kill all these people? He never asked for any revenge, did he? He made a covenant with Ishbosheth then and Abner. He made a covenant with them. Leave them alone. I'm not worried about it. Well, that's what they said. See, and that's what religion does. Religion will say, we did it in God's name. All the wars in this country, do you realize most of them are done in the name of the Lord? Do you know how many people have died because group of people thought they knew more about God than the other one? So we'll kill all the ones who are contradicting what we're saying? Do you realize the pattern is still alive and well in this country, in this world? That when someone doesn't talk like us or walk like us, he's immediately become our enemy? You know what I've learned over the years? That people who don't talk like me or walk like me or think like me can still teach me something. The dumbest man in the world can teach you something. He can teach you what not to do. I can watch the fool and know what I'm not supposed to do. See, take everything in God's creation as a tool to learn. Don't try to limit God to say he can only teach me through somebody wearing a suit and a tie standing up screaming and yelling at you. That's not the way God works. God speaks to you through the hall of his creation. Can you look out there and see the sun rise every morning? He's saying, I'm rising in your heart. Can you see the darkness set at night sometimes? Yeah, you're going to experience some darkness through all these trials of life. There's storms come along once in a while, isn't there? All these things can work, and we have to see God in all things. Everything dies in the wintertime, doesn't it? But guess what? Come spring, we got life coming back again. Same thing with God. We go through the cycles. Okay? And he said that Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, which sought your life. Can anybody show me where Ishbosheth tried to kill David? Didn't do it. Now Saul did, but this was a son. And David goes on and answers Rechab and Baanah, his brother, in verse 9, the son of Rimmon, the Berethite, and said to them, "As the Lord liveth, who has redeemed my soul?" And literally it should say this, "The Lord is alive, who has redeemed my soul out of all what?" This word adversity is the word Tsarah, T-S-A-R-A-H. And it means trouble or the female rival. He has the Lord is alive and he has, this is what David's saying, "The Lord is alive and he has redeemed me from all my soulish troubles. I didn't need somebody to go kill somebody to redeem me." Hello? I don't need somebody to go kill somebody so they don't aggravate me anymore. That person was in my life for a reason. You hear me? I don't need somebody to go kill somebody to get them out of my face. What I need to do is look at the attitude of my heart. Why are they bothering me? What is in my heart that's causing me the problems? Because it's not the people externally causing the problem. They're only a symptom of what my problem is. The problem is my heart. If I have the mind of God, the heart of God, why could I not love A-L-L? Why can't I love all people? Why can't I accept all people? The problem lies within my heart. If I can't accept all people, I don't have to say I agree with them. I said love them and accept them. There's the problem. And there's what we have to get into, and into our thinking, okay? So he says this, "God's alive and he's the one who has redeemed me out of all my soulish troubles." Verse 10, when David's going on reiterating a story, he's reliving a story that something happened in his life just past, not long ago. He said, "When one told me, saying, 'Behold, Saul is dead,' thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziglag, who thought that I would have given him a reward for his tidings." Now, about this time right here, if I was Baanah and Rechab, I'd be looking for an exit route. You hear me? Boys, you got some problems coming here. He's telling you right now. And right now, I'd already been looking for an escape route if I believe I'd been standing there. And these boys were standing there. But as carnal as they were, they thought they were going to get a reward too. And he says, "How much more, when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed, shall I not therefore now require his blood on your hand and take you away from the earth?" Oh my goodness, boy, this thing here is full of meat. You hear what he says? "How much more, when a wicked man has slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed." Do you know what that is? It's when Adam said, "I will be like the Most High God. I will do what I want to do. I'll ascend to the heights of the north upon the mountain, set on the mountain of God." It's when you yourself overtake the Christ and said no, just like Adam did in the garden. Do you hear what I'm saying? When I choose to live what I want to do and I don't care what God says, right there is what's going on. He's telling you, you are slaying the Christ. Which one of us, this new movie coming out, The Passion of Christ, I saw a trailer on it. And Mel Gibson has got some good truth in it. I don't think it's totally all right, but it'd be something worth watching, you know. But it's pretty good. I think it's just coming out real right shortly. They've just shown it, but they have some trailers on the web you can go on and look at. Anyway, he said, "I'm as guilty of killing Christ as any man in the past. I got to applaud him for that. Humanity put him on that cross. The Jews are screaming anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitic. No, he's not. He's not against you. He's saying everybody in humanity is responsible for putting him on the cross. And that's exactly what David's saying right here. When a wicked man goes and slays the righteous man in his own house, whose house is this? This is the house of the living God that I'm dwelling in, isn't it? And what right have I got to come in the middle of the day and slay that man on his bed? I don't have a chance. I don't have a right to do that, do I? But we've all done that, haven't we? Every one of us have done that. We're all guilty of it. That's why he said he concluded us all in unbelief, that all could have mercy. So they went in and did what they did, looking for good tidings, but he said, "Shall I not therefore now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth?" Do you know what that says? Everybody sees that as a terrible thing, don't they? But you know what he did? He said, I'm going to take you away from the what? Take you away from what? No, from the earth. Well, bless God. Get me out of this earth. What's the other option? Spirit. There's either spirit or earth. Render, heaven or earth. That's all there is. So when he gets me out of here, guess what? It's got to be better than this. So even though we made some bad mistakes, he sure is. He's taking care of all that. David, who was a type of Christ, who took care of our sin? Christ. Okay. And David commanded his young men, that's the first fruit, and they slew them. Okay? But whoa, watch what happens. And cut off their hands and their feet and hang them over the pool in Hebron. Now look here. He cut off their hands and their feet. Do you know what this is speaking of? He cut off their hands, their works. He cut off their lifestyle, their feet. Okay? And he hanged them over the pool in Hebron. What do you think Hebron is? The place of association. He hung the works of the lifestyle, the works in the lifestyle of carnality. He hung it up and said, this is what you get. Huh? Oh, it's a crucifixion. The nails went through the hands and feet, didn't it? Just like the crucifixion. He said, this is what you get when you do those carnal things. This is what's there. And those hands and feet being hung up was for you, was it not? And he put it in a place of association, the cross. And let me tell you something. On the cross, everybody sees it as a place of death. But it's really a place of what? Life. Didn't we all become one guilty? We went there as one guilty person. When he died, he took the sins of the whole world. It became one. And when he came down off that cross and was resurrected, we became in that same place of association, one in Christ. There's no male, there's no female, but we are all one in Christ. And that's what he's talking. It is a beautiful passage of Scripture. But you can't read the surface of it and see this. You've got to hear the Spirit of God talking to you through this thing. Okay? But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron. Oh, what is he saying? Huh? Well, he took the head, the thinking of Ishbosheth, the man of shame, that's the carnal mind, and they buried it in the sepulcher of Abner. Who did Abner represent? The old order. So they took the old thinking and buried it with the old order in the place of association in Hebron. Guess what? It's a place where they all came one. It's speaking of the Feast of Tabernacles, the oneness, the ingathering into one. Man, this is powerful stuff. Beautiful stuff. I get so excited when I start seeing the things that God hid in here from these minds of wise people. And he said, I've revealed it unto babes. Yeah? I'm one of his babies. Yeah, I'm one of his babies. And I love it. When I can see these things, it's greater than any thrill that life gives me, that the natural life gives me, to be able to see these things and understand them. It's an awesome thing. Mm-hmm.
When it says, walk the law, not